We're continuing in the series on David and people in the life of David, and there's just so much that we can cover, but we just don't have that time. But I encourage you to dig into the life of David, because there's just so much that you can learn about every aspect of life. I think another great lesson is about Uzzah, and you know, there's a great lesson there about worship, and you know, you could have a great study with that. But there's so many things in the life of David that we can discuss. But tonight we're going to be looking at David and Bathsheba and the things that David didn't see from his rooftop. And that's what we're going to be considering tonight. It's a difficult lesson. I'm going to say that from the beginning, because we just can't sugarcoat this. You read the text and it says what it does, and it's very hard. But this is a dark time in David's life, and he's going to reap consequences in this for generations. But what we also see is, as we just sang, David could sing redemption's sweet song. And that even though David had sinned, even though David had committed murder and committed adultery, and I think broke pretty much all of the Ten Commandments, he could be redeemed. And the bones that God had broken could once again rejoice, as Psalm 51 says. And that sinners would be converted because of David, because of what he had learned. And so, yes, this is hard, but I want to say this from the beginning, that as we go into this, remember there's redemption in Jesus Christ. And we don't understand the beauty of the song that we sang until we've really, as the prodigal son did, live in the hog pen for a while. And then we realize how amazing God's grace really is. And so that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. So thankful for everyone who's here. I know you've had busy days with work and school and all kinds of other things that have gone on. And you're here because you love Jesus, and I hope that we can look at these things and that there will be encouragement to you. I'll just say what's on my mind, and I have this mirror, but I have to kind of stand back and look, because it's like David with Saul's armor. I haven't tested that, so I don't know how to use the rear view mirror. So what we're going to look and talk about is what David didn't see from his rooftop. David won every battle, except at home. If you're taking notes, and by the way, I want to make all of these outlines available, if that's okay, and so we'll make a way to do that, so that there's a lot of material in here that we're not going to get to tonight, and if I fly by a verse or two, just understand that you can feel free to have these outlines. The kings, one of the things I want to talk about tomorrow, because we're going to talk about Nathan tomorrow. But the very presence of a king in Israel revealed the heart of Israel. But the very presence of a prophet in Israel revealed the heart of God. And we'll talk more about that tomorrow night. But the kings, God knew when they went into the land of Canaan that they were going to appoint kings. And Deuteronomy 17 is a great chapter. God says, I know this is what's going to happen. You're going to appoint kings. And he says, here's what I don't want you to do as kings. And here's what I do want you to do. And they were supposed to write a copy of the law and have that right by their side so they could lead, be spiritual leaders of Israel. But they were not to multiply wives for themselves. Interesting. Jesus said that you will know things by their fruit. And one of the things we can see when you see multiple marriages, whether it was Jacob or Abraham or David or Solomon, look at the result. The jealousy, the murder, the everything that happened with the favoritism that happened with the wives and the kids. I mean, even Hannah and Peninnah with Elkanah, you know, that happened in the beginning of 1 Samuel. So you can see the results of that. David won every battle except at home. David had multiple wives, and we see what happened because of that. And so David created his own trouble. And so what we're going to look at is in 2 Samuel chapter 11. David had been prosperous. David had been successful. And I think this is further on into David's career. I don't think he's just a young 30-year-old when this happens. Again, it's a lesson that sexual temptation is not just for teenagers, right? 2 Samuel 11, in the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, David sent Joab and the servants with him and all Israel. What had David done to this point? He'd gone to war with them. What's David do this time? He's at home. Don't read over what it just said. At the time when kings go out to the battle, where's David? He's at home. And they ravaged the Ammonites and besieged the Rabbah, but David remained at Jerusalem. It happened late one afternoon when David arose from his couch and was walking on the roof of the king's house that he saw from the roof a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful. And David sent and inquired about the woman. And one said, "Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" That's one of his mighty men, 2 Samuel 23. One of his best soldiers. And they say, "David, she's Uriah's wife." Shouldn't that have been another warning? Verse 4, "So David sent messengers and took her, and she came to him, and he lay with her. Now she had been purifying herself from her uncleanness, and then she returned to her house. And the woman conceived, and she sent and told David, 'I am pregnant.'" So David sent word to Joab, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." And Joab sent Uriah to David, and when Uriah came to him, David asked how Joab was doing and how the people were doing and how the war was going. What's David trying to do? He's scared, isn't he? He's going to have to make this go away. That's what they say in politics. You've got to make this go away. Right? You see that in the movies. We've got to make this go away. This is real life. David's like, we've got to make this go away. So they bring in Uriah the Hittite. And David said to Uriah, verse 9, "Go down to your house and wash your feet." And Uriah went out of the king's house, and there followed him a present from the king. But Uriah slept at the door of the king's house with all the servants of his lord and did not go down to his house. This man has a lot of honor. I'm sleeping with my soldiers. When they told David Uriah did not go down to his house, David said to Uriah, "Have you not come from a journey? Why did you not go down to your house?" And Uriah said to David, "The ark and Israel and Judah dwell in booths or tents, and my lord Joab and the servants of my lord are camping in the open field. Shall I then go to my house and eat and drink and lie with my wife? As you live and as your soul lives, I will not do this thing." I know this may be obvious, but there's a reason why he wants Uriah to sleep with Bathsheba right now. Because he can blame the baby on Uriah. Oh, it's his baby. So we continue. Then David said to Uriah, "Remain here today also, and tomorrow I will send you back." And so Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next. He should have been out on the field fighting a battle. And David invited him, and he ate in his presence and drank so that he made him drunk. I heard a preacher say one time that sin makes you stupid. And that's the truth. What's David doing now? He's getting Uriah drunk. You think, David, God's saying this, David. What are you doing? And in the evening, he went out to lie on his couch with the servants of the Lord, but he did not go down to his house. He thought, well, if he gets drunk, he's definitely now going to want to go be with his wife. Uriah had more honor drunk at this point than David did sober. We'll continue. Verse 14. In the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by the hand of Uriah. In the letter he wrote, "Set Uriah in the forefront of the hardest fighting and then draw back from him that he may be struck down and die." And as Joab was besieging the city, he assigned Uriah to the place where he knew there were valiant men. And the men of the city came out and fought with Joab, and some of the servants of David among the people fell. Notice, there's a lot more than Uriah that dies. Some of David's servants die. Uriah the Hittite also died. Then Joab sent and told David all the news about the fighting. And he instructed the messenger. See, Joab is another great study. He's a very complex character. You don't ever know where he's going to land. But he knew David, and he knew this situation, and he's like, here's what's going to happen when you go to the king, and this is what you need to do. So he sends the messenger, when you have finished telling all the news about fighting to the king, and if the king's anger arises and he says to you, why did you go so near the city to fight? Did you not know that they would shoot from the wall? He's afraid maybe the king's going to forget what you just told us to do. Why'd you send them so close to the wall? That's not a good battle tactic. It's not good. Whatever, strategy. I'm not sure if I'm saying the right word. So he references back to the judges. Who killed Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal? Did not a woman cast an upper millstone on him from the wall so that he died at Thebes? Maybe this is something David said before. Why did you go so near the wall? And then you shall say, your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also. So the messenger went and came and told David all that Joab had sent him to tell. And the messenger said to David, the men gained an advantage over us and came out against us in the field, but we drove them back to the entrance of the gate. And then the archers shot at your servants from the wall. Some of the king's servants are dead, and your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also. Sin will make you stupid, but it will also take away your mercy. When you get so caught up in a life of sin, you'll lack mercy. What soldier? David was a soldier, and these men were his best men. This would have torn his heart apart that Uriah was dead, but he's so caught up in the wrong life right now, he's lost his mercy. Because he's so desperate to cover it up. Verse 25, David said to the messenger, thus you shall say to Joab, do not let this matter displease you, for the sword devours now one and now another. Strengthen your attack against the city and overthrow it, and encourage him. When the wife of Uriah heard that Uriah, her husband, was dead, she lamented over her husband. And when the mourning was over, David sent and brought her to his house, and she became his wife and bore him a son. But the thing, this doesn't always happen in the historical accounts. There's things that just happen. God doesn't give us commentary one way or the other, but this one he does. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. And that's an understatement, isn't it? And tomorrow's lesson is about David. But we see that David, it's just sad, isn't it? This is hard. This made God cry. And so we're going to look at what David didn't see from his rooftop. And I'm pushing the big button. Oh, there we are. Okay. Are we coming up? I may have to rely on you to click it. I don't know. Is it? All right. What we see, just go ahead and put everything up from that slide, and we'll just work that way. We'll be flexible, right? What we see here in 2 Samuel chapter 11, just as the text says, if you go through this, is that David remained at home. At the time when the kings went out to the battle, where was David? He was at home. We see that David got up from bed. There's nothing wrong with getting up from bed, is there? But then he went up on his rooftop. There's nothing wrong with getting up on your rooftop. But then he saw Bathsheba. Now, I just want to make a side point that sometimes I just personally don't like it when we make modesty lessons about Bathsheba, that she's something, that she did something wrong here. And I don't know what's studied or taught here, and I don't want to, but I'm just saying is Bathsheba is called the innocent lamb that was stolen from her husband. She's bathing to cleanse herself from her impurity. She's following the law. He's gawking at her. So he starts looking. Now we're diving into the wrong place, aren't we? He saw her. What should he have done? He should have averted his eyes and gone back to pray. Okay? But he didn't. And the farther you go, I think probably a lot of us understand this. The farther you go, the harder it is to walk away, isn't it? He looked, and then he inquired. Now we're going farther because the emotions, the hormones, the drive is pushing. He starts inquiring, who is this lady? And the servants are like, David, hold on a minute. This is Uriah the Hittite's wife. But now he's becoming pretty far gone, isn't he? And so he inquires, and then he brings her into his home. And we think about passages like James chapter 1, and I'm just going to read it. I mean, you might want to listen right now, and I don't want to take time to turn to there, but James chapter 1, verse 13 says, "Let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, and He Himself tempts no one." Listen, "But each person is tempted..." David is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desires. Just, I love to fish. It's that idea of fishing. God, the devil was just playing with David and enticed him by his own desires. This is an area where David was weak. And he is enticed by his own desire. Then desire, when it is conceived, gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brothers. And that's exactly what happened to David. And it is exactly what's happened to so many others. We understand that. David created this, but it was avoidable. But there were so many places along the way where he could have backed away, right? You think, I'm just too far gone. No, you can still back away. A young couple, they're going to get married, and it's getting passionate, and they're like, well, we're going to get married anyways, and we can't stop this. And then it happens. We can back away because God says you can, right? So we understand David was walking on rooftops, and look at the consequences that came from that. You know, we create our own trouble. You know, sometimes we're idle and inactive and we should be busy doing something else. I think that was where David could have been. If he'd have been in the field fighting, he hadn't had time to commit adultery. That's plain and simple, right? We said we were bored. Mom made us pull weeds. So I think she was pretty smart as a mom of two boys. We create our own trouble. We're tired. We're weak. We're not as strong or alert. You know, I heard a football coach say nothing good happens after 10 o'clock. It's probably a good rule. We get tired. We get weak. Our inhibitions start to go down and things start to happen. We all understand this, I believe. We place ourselves in tempting situations. There's curiosity that happens. Seek and you shall find happens in a good and a bad way. Doesn't it? Romans chapter 13 says, "The night is far gone, the day is at hand. Let's cast off the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let's walk properly as in the daytime, not in orgies and drunkenness, not in sexual immorality and sensuality, not in quarreling and jealousy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to gratify its desires." I'm alone with my girlfriend, and when we're alone, things happen. Well, there's one cure for that. Don't be alone. That's a start. I'm not saying that solves everything. Don't get me wrong. I'm not idealist. I mean, but that'll stop a lot of it, won't it? Well, when I'm alone with my computer at 3 a.m, I end up doing things I shouldn't do. What did Romans 13 just say? Make no opportunity. Don't put yourself in those situations. Isn't that pretty plain? That's easy to understand, but we get caught up in our own emotions and we don't do that. So David gives us, this is real life. This is where we live. This is where the world is. This is what David did. "Don't be deceived," Paul said. "God is not mocked. Whatever you sow, you'll reap." And David reaped to the fullest the consequences of his sexual sins. Next slide, Chris. Thank you. I'm not sure if you're... No one can read that yet, right? Don't read it. Anybody familiar with Dr. Frank Turek? I don't know if you're familiar with him or not. He does a lot of evidences, apologetics type stuff. But we heard him speak at the University of Michigan. We took some of our young people over to hear him. And he started talking about the sexual relationship. He said the sexual relationship is like a fire. If it's in the fireplace, it warms your house and it's beautiful. But anywhere else in your house, it burns your house down. And I've never forgotten that. Hebrews 13:4 talks about that the marriage bed is undefiled. It is pure. It is holy when we don't bring in the world. And so that is something for us to realize. This is what was happening to David's house. And although he was going to be forgiven, and we'll learn that more about that tomorrow. Tomorrow is about Nathan. And Wednesday night, we're going to talk all about grace and Mephibosheth. But here's the hard lesson of, he's opened a door and everything's flying out of it and he's never going to get everything back in. And so this, my friends, is a divine cold shower for us. If we would study these passages, and passages like Proverbs 5 through 7 about the warnings of sexual sin, it is a divine cold shower. But we also need to help each other be accountable on that, because we are not going to do it on our own. We need people with skin on to help each other. So what we're going to look at for the rest of the lesson is, if you would advance to the next slide, please. Oh, next slide. I read that slide, sorry. What David didn't see from his rooftop. Okay, hit the first one. There are seven things that I put together that, and you may have others. When David was looking at Bathsheba, and all he wanted was Bathsheba, and all he thought about was Bathsheba, and all he wanted is to get Bathsheba into his bed, when that's all he saw, there were, at least to me, seven things he didn't see. And number one is, and I think the most important thing, is the pain that God felt. I think it's just so encouraging to think about Joseph in the book of Genesis. And the reason, the key reason why he didn't sleep with Potiphar's wife was because he said a question, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Something in Joseph stopped him. And what it was is, I don't want to hurt my God, because this is really going to hurt him. David understands that later in his confessions. Psalm 32, Psalm 51, those passages that I believe David wrote during this time. In Psalm 51, in his confession, he says, right at the beginning, against you and you only have I sinned and done this great wickedness in your sight. I broke God's heart. And we need to think about that. I don't want to break my mom's heart. But even more importantly, I don't want to break God's heart. And we lose sight of that, don't we, when we're in the emotions of the moment. The pain that God felt. His sins deeply hurt God. The thing that David had done displeased the Lord. As he'll see, we'll look at 2 Samuel chapter 12. And we'll talk more about this tomorrow, so I just want to breeze through this. Look at all the examples of what God says when God, through Nathan, reveals how hurt he is. In 2 Samuel 12, he reminds him in 2 Samuel 12, verse 7 through 8, of all of the good things he'd done for him. God says, David, what have I done for you? And I would have, this is the passage that haunts me, I would have given you much more. There was a door that David never got to open. I would have given you much more. God says, all these things I would have given you. And then he gets to verse 9. Why have you despised the word of the Lord to do what's evil in his sight? Verse 10, you have utterly despised me. Verse 14, you have utterly scorned the Lord. David, you have broken my heart. There's somebody that loves you dearly, and they look you in the eye, and you just have the utmost respect and love for them, and they tell you, you have broken my heart. How does that feel? God says, you broke my heart. The second point, please, Chris. David broke his own heart, didn't he? You see, when we sin like this, it affects every part of our being. Our heart and our soul and our spirit. Everything. You read Psalm 32. Read Psalm 51. He said when he kept silent in Psalm 32, his bones wasted away through his groaning all day long. He's hiding it. He's suppressing it. He's just trying to deal with it in private. And it is destroying him from the inside out, isn't it? His bones wasted away all day because of his groaning. Psalm 51, my sin is ever before me. No matter where he turns, no matter what he thinks about, no matter what he's doing, all he can think about is what he has just done. It's broken his heart. The inner turmoil that he feels. Understand that when you sin against God, you are going to be torn up inside. God's not going to let you go easy. And He's going to allow you to break your heart so that He can teach you and train you and show you how much He loves you. But you've got to understand that and go through that journey. For third point, Chris. Did David just hurt David? No. When I just started lining, and I've probably missed several. And again, I know this is hard, but we have to go through this. I started going through all of the people that were hurt by David, and I know I've missed several. But I think of David, but how about Bathsheba? Was she hurt? Her husband was murdered by the man whose baby she now carries. Several times in the rest of the Bible, she is referred to as the wife of Uriah. Even in Matthew 1, which we'll get to later. This was her husband. Bathsheba's family lost a baby and a son-in-law. Uriah's family lost a son. Israel lost a great soldier. One of their top soldiers. All of those mighty men lost one of their best comrades. The servants of David also died with Uriah. And think about all of the families that they were all involved in. Paul says in Romans 14, and I don't want to lift that verse out of the context, but I think he makes a general statement that's true at all times. None of us lives to himself. None of us dies to himself, whether we live or die with the Lord. You don't live to yourself. And when I do things, I affect a lot of other people around me, don't we? Don't I? You affect a lot of other people. You don't live to yourself. And what we do can just explode like waves, not even ripples, just like waves crashing, a tsunami effect. This is what David did. Multiple families. David's family bore the brunt of this sinfulness, the nation of Israel. So, again, the statement in the world is, I can do what I want as long as I don't hurt anybody. Well, that is such a fallacy. That is so self-absorbed and is so now thinking. So we think about, again, it's a divine cold shower. Who am I going to hurt when I do this? The fourth thing. You think about the crisis, the tragedy, the trouble at home that arose because of David's sin. We'll talk more about this tomorrow as far as what Nathan said. But Nathan said, the sword will never depart from your house. I will raise up trouble from within your own house. And, you know, David, you did this in secret, but your neighbor's going to take your wives and sleep with them in the top, in the sight of the sun. And Absalom takes 10 of David's concubines and sleeps on the rooftop of David's palace. Remember, David's walking on the rooftop and did this in private? Absalom did this in public. We have so many things that happened at home because of his sin. Think of the situation David had at home. You think of those several sons. I know many of you know a lot of this, but I know some may not. Some of those older sons of David, Absalom, Amnon, Adonijah, they were self-absorbed, entitled brats. I just said it. They were self-absorbed, entitled brats who thought the world owed them everything. And David, he blew it when it came to a dad. I think he got it right with Solomon, but he blew it with them. And there's plenty of biblical evidence to back that up. But we see Amnon raped his half-sister Tamar. And because David didn't do anything about it, Absalom plotted the murder of Amnon. And then Absalom was out, and David didn't talk to him for 5 years if you start adding up what happened. And so it just becomes exploding in the family, all these problems. His son Absalom tries to take over the throne. So does his son Adonijah. And so again, God says the sword will never depart from your house. Understand that when we walk away from God and when we commit these kinds of sins, God will forgive us because that's just the God we serve. He is faithful. The blood of Jesus Christ covers all our sin. But when you open that door, understand, things fly out. You'll never get back in. And I hope that we're thinking about these things because these passages are written for us as examples, 1 Corinthians 10 says, so that we will not continue in those things. So that we will not think that these things couldn't happen to us because they do. I'm sure, again, I don't know the situations here and I'm glad I don't. I can preach freely, you know. So we understand these things happen because we're human. But hopefully the text, the scripture here can help us to realize, man, I gotta stop. We also, the fifth point, thank you, Chris. We'll talk more about this tomorrow. I don't want to preach tomorrow's sermon. But when David hears this parable about the sheep that's stolen, the one man's ewe lamb, he nailed David. He just got right into where David was really interested, tapped into his sense of justice, and David just got so upset. He had this just righteous indignation about a guy who stole a sheep. And he says, that man is going to restore fourfold. And that was actually the penalty in the law, according to Exodus 22. If you stole something, if you stole $10, you had to give back 40. You restored fourfold. I can't get that out. I wonder sometimes if David had just pronounced his own sentence. Because when you start reading through the rest of the history, you have the baby that was born to Bathsheba, and you have Absalom, Amnon, and Adonijah. I don't know. I can't say that conclusively. But I just think that's interesting. Again, this is hard. It's hard hitting. But we'll go to the sixth point. Because of his sin, he had a weakened position as a king. God says you have given great occasion to the enemies of God to blaspheme. And he also had a weakened position with Absalom. Absalom, I think, tapped into his dad's weakness. And that's why he was able to convince so many people to go with him to take over the throne. Because his dad was weakened. The hearts of the men of Israel were easily swayed at this point toward Absalom because of David's weakened position. The seventh point. And I have, again, the outline has a lot more, and we're not going to go through all this tonight. But there's a lot to learn about parenting here. We're all broken. As parents, kids, we'll just say it in front of you. We're all broken. We're all flawed. We're all sinners in need of God's grace. But because we've made mistakes in life, and just because we've sinned, and just because we've broken our heart and God's heart, doesn't mean we still have to be parents. David just backed away as a dad. With Absalom and Amnon and Adonijah, and you can see how he just backed away. And I just wonder, all I can say is I just wonder if he just felt so guilty for what he did, how can I correct them? How could he correct Amnon for raping Tamar when look what I've done? I'm not sure. But we see he had a weakened position as a dad, and we see he became very passive with those sons. Just because you've sinned against God doesn't mean you have to stop being a dad and a mom. And we have to be very careful as kids not to hold so much against our parents, too. We're all sinners and saved by grace. It's just something to remember. That's a whole other family relationship lesson. But David really blew it with those sons because they needed him to step up and be a father, and he abdicated his role. And so when we get so far gone into sin, and then we're trying to come back, there's that overwhelming wave of guilt that hits you, and like, how in the world can I even say anything to my kids? You need to. Think about Peter. Do you think Peter felt an overwhelming wave of guilt for denying his Lord three times publicly in front of everybody? Didn't Jesus know he was going to do that? He knew that Peter was going to do that. And he says, Peter, I know you're going to do this. I'm praying that you won't, but I know you're going to do it. But when you have returned what? Strengthen your brethren. When you have returned, moms and dads, teach your kids. Don't be silent. Do you want them to go down the same path? Just think about those things. So, next slide, please. I want you to turn in your Bibles, because all that stuff is really hard. But we have to talk about it. I know I've said that several times, but I want you to turn to Matthew chapter 1. I know there's nothing new under the sun, so I think that a lot of you have probably already studied this. How many of you have studied the women in Matthew 1? How many don't like to have people ask them to raise their hands? I love studying the women in Matthew 1. We see in Matthew chapter 1, don't just read through genealogies. Oh, all these names. Oh, this is so boring. There's a reason that list of names is there. Yes, it can be boring. There's times it is. We're human. But Matthew chapter 1, verses 1 through 17, gives you the family story of Jesus, and you realize He came to redeem us. Look who's in that list. Look who's in that list. Abraham lied. Judah committed adultery. Jacob deceived his brother. Just look through the list. And so as you start looking through that list, and we get to, let me turn there in the text of Matthew 1. Starting in verse 1. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac, and Isaac the father of Jacob, and Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers. Again, Judah committed adultery with Tamar. Judah the father of Perez and Zerah by Tamar, and Perez the father of Hezron, and Hezron the father of Ram, and Ram the father of Amminadab, and Amminadab the father of Nashon. I believe Nashon was one of the 600,000 men that died in the wilderness because of unfaithfulness. But yet he brought into the world a man named Salmon. Salmon begat Boaz by Rahab. Rahab, what does the Old Testament call her? The harlot. She's in Jesus' family. And I know many of you have probably known that, but maybe some of you, that's the first time you ever saw that. A prostitute is in Jesus' family line. Isn't that incredible? Rahab the harlot. And then this young Boaz, or this Boaz, marries an outsider named Ruth from an idolatrous, evil, wicked nation, and brings Ruth into the family of Israel and redeems her. And then they have a child named Obed. And Obed has Jesse. And guess who Jesse brings into the world after 8 tries? David! And who did Jesus come from? Solomon. And his other name is Jedediah or something like that. It means God loved him. And Solomon's mama was Bathsheba. But it says, her who had been the wife of Uriah. In the midst of all this pain, in the midst of all this horrific destruction that David brought upon his nation, his family, everybody around him, we see redemption. And you say, how in the world can we get through this? Jesus says it can be done. Maybe that's your giant if we connect to Sunday morning's lesson. How in the world can I navigate the consequences of what I've done? Maybe that's your giant. Jesus says, I'm here to redeem. And I think there's one more slide, Chris. This applies to David. As it says in 2 Samuel 12, I've forgiven you, David. Isn't that a wonderful statement? Would you forgive David? It'd be pretty hard to forgive him, wouldn't it? Let's just say it. We're human, right? We're his family, or we're one of those people hurt. You want to forgive David right now? God says you're forgiven. Such were some of you. Such were some of you. But you were washed, but you were sanctified, but you were justified in the name of the Lord Jesus and by the Spirit of our God. That's what Jesus is offering to you tonight. And I pray that if you're caught up in sins like David, that you'll realize I need to stop and I need to get redemption. And I need to face this giant. And through Jesus, you will overcome. But you won't do it by yourself. You need people with skin on, and there's a great group right here to help you. Let's think about these things as we stand and as we sing.
Let's all attend the upon your ear. Sweet is cry of love and pity, call us, turn and listen, say and hear. Ye that labor and are heavy laden, lean upon your dear Lord's breast. Ye that labor and are heavy laden, come and I will give you rest. Take his yoke, for he is meek and lowly. Bear his burden to him, turn. He who calleth is a master holy. He will teach if you will learn. Ye that labor and are heavy laden, lean upon your dear Lord's breast. Ye that labor and are heavy laden, come and I will give you rest. Then his loving tender voice obeying, bear his yoke, his burden take. Find the yoke his hand is on you laying, light and easy for his sake. Ye that labor and are heavy laden, lean upon your dear Lord's breast. Ye that labor and are heavy laden, come and I will give you rest.